countdown to the last comic shop in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Superman!
Silence!
Wait, watch it! Hey, don't touch me! It's a Claude. Promises were made and gifts exchanged. Gotta hand it to you. You always told the truth. A guy always knew where he stood with you.
Try to get them into the molecule chamber. It takes their powers, see? And turns them into ordinary human beings. Now, if you could
just... Don't go in there! It's a trap!
You poisoned a snake!
That's a molecule chamber. It makes people like you into people like me.
You've done well. The crystal there activates the mechanism. Lex Luthor, ruler of Australia, activate the machine.
Thank you. With your permission.
And now, finally, take my hand and swear eternal loyalty to Zod.
All right! That was our rendition of a classic scene from Superman 2 here on the Last Comic Shop.
Yes, that's right. We are opening up the shop to everyone. You don't just have to be a Christopher Reeve Superman 2 fan to join us under the comic book tent.
That's right, but we may make you kneel before the Last Comic Shop.
Well, Chad might. I'm not. I'm egalitarian. I like everybody inside that comic book tent. I'm the host with the most, Andy Larson. And, of course, I'm joined by Chad Smith, as well as Jay Scott, who helped me out with that recreation of that scene from Superman 2. And if you're wondering why we were talking about Superman, it's because we're covering another DC book here on the Last Comic Shop. It seems to be a trend. Like, we take a week off and then we're back with DC.
When they thought you were out, they pull you back in.
I feel like by the end of this year, nearly half the shows are going to be DC. But there's a lot of DC comic books out there, and they just seem to be pulling us back. And this week, we're going to be reviewing a recent release from DC Comics. It's called Superman 78. It's a six-part miniseries that was released basically as kind of like a conceit about, hey, what if they had made more movies after Superman 2? But before we get to that comic book review on this week's show, it's time to get done with some business. The business of reviewing our Last Comic Shop weekly poll. That's right. As you may or may not know, but hopefully you do, every Wednesday on the Last Comic Shop's Twitter account, at Last Comic Shop, we like to release a weekly poll to all of our fans. And the response recently has been tremendous. And as a result of those weekly polls, we like to come on this program and give you the results. The last time we did this was a couple weeks ago, and we finished up with our Rorschach show. So on today's program, we're going to start off with 5,000 kilometers per second. So, J.A., what was the poll for that week?
Yes, so the poll we had during Love Week, it was the week of Valentine's Day, best comic book couple.
Ooh.
There were four couples, Lois and Clark, Peter and MJ, Scott and Jean from the X-Men, and then Reed and Sue.
And those are four classic couples. I know that when you had posted this, I was thinking outside the box, and I said, what about Luke Cage and Danny Rand? They're a classic comic book couple. Power Man and Iron Fist. Where are they?
So, yeah, but you do that, then you're going down the dark hole. You have to do Cloak and Dagger. And...
It's true. And I will say this. Boy, did we have a lot of folks that were kind of fussy about our Gene and Scott pick. Because they were like, they're the most dysfunctional couple on this list. Gene and Wolverine?
Right, or White Queen and this. It's like, oh, man. What about Scott and Madeline? He screwed her over.
Well, what was the eventual winner of this, J.A.?
In a landslide, Lois and Clark, with Peter and MJ following on, and Reed and Sue sort of right in the middle at 17%.
So, Chad, who did you vote for?
Out of those choices, sure, my heart goes to Spider-Man and Mary Jane, because I've lived the most with those characters and their relationship.
But I think my vote goes towards Lois and Clark. Just there's something about Lois Lane and that 1940s-esque whip smart reporter that I just absolutely love. And then Clark having to pretend to be, you know, oh, shucks, farm boy. And they seem like caricatures, but that's what I love about them, because they're caricatures that are super fun.
Yeah, I thought everyone was voting for Lois Clark. No way was I going Lois and Clark. I figured Andrew's going to do Peter and MJ. I didn't know. I thought you might be Reed and Sue, Chad. But I was all Scott and Jean. I was Scott and Jean all the way, baby.
Of course, our resident X-Men fan here. But you're right. I did vote for Peter and MJ ultimately because, again, I stopped reading that freaking comic book when they destroyed their marriage because that was sacrosanct to me. That was like bringing back, I don't know, Uncle Ben from the dead. Like, there's things you don't do with my Spider-Man. Just too many great moments between Peter and MJ. Any case, what was the next poll that we had during our Fantastic Four week?
Best non-original Fantastic Four member. So if you get outside of Reed, Sue, Johnny Storm, and The Thing, who do you feel fits best within the Fantastic Four?
There have been a lot of people that have filled in for members of the Fantastic Four over the year, but you only had four choices. Which four choices would we give fans?
So we gave them She-Hulk, Spider-Man, Franklin Richards, and Valeria Richards.
No Herbie!
No Herbie. For fans of the Fantastic Four cartoon, no Herbie.
Yeah. You know, some other fans, they recommended Wyatt Wingfoot, which was a real big throwback. I was like, wow.
That's a deep cut. That's a deep cut
if ever I heard one.
It is. But who ultimately won this one?
So She-Hulk took it with over 50% of the vote.
For this one, I'm going She-Hulk, mainly because I still don't feel right about Spider-Man being on a team, even when it is one with this family atmosphere. And She-Hulk was the type of character where she really needs to belong somewhere. She does a great job when she has other interesting characters to bounce off of, and it works well for both scenarios, like the Fantastic Four benefits and She-Hulk benefits.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Sometimes, you know, you're right. If She-Hulk's not played for laughs like it is with the John Byrne run that we reviewed previously on this show, like, she does seem to get lost. And so she is sometimes a better character to be part of an ensemble, which is what the Fantastic Four are. Like, all of those characters, other than, again, the guy that left, which was The Thing. Like, the rest of them, they kind of sort of need each other to bounce off of. That's the whole purpose of what they do.
I just think there's not enough law used with She-Hulk. She's a lawyer. There should be more law courtroom scenes, like Law and Order She-Hulk edition.
Bash! Although I agree with the fact that Spider-Man shouldn't be on a team, if he's going to be on a team, he's going to be on the Fantastic Four. And so that's who I vote. That's his family. That's his good friends. That's the guys that got the symbiote off of him.
No. Hold the train. The only team that Spider-Man is hanging out with is his amazing friends. That's Iceman and Firestar.
All right. What was poll number three, J.A.? This was during our other history of the DC Universe, but this had absolutely nothing to do with the book we reviewed that week, right?
No. We're tying into the fact that Netflix is pulling all the MCU series off their platform. So it was the last week and weekend that you could watch Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Punisher, Luke Cage, and the Defenders. So naturally, we wanted to know. And it was kind of a layup. This was a freaking... We just gave everybody this one. Which of the Netflix shows, which one would you binge? Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Punisher, or Luke Cage? We didn't include Iron Fist in that. We just accepted that would come in dead last.
We had a month's notice that the Marvel shows were going off of Netflix with no word they were going to show up on Disney+. And I told myself, now's the time to finish watching Daredevil. And I watched zero episodes of Daredevil. Daredevil's the one, but for whatever reason, you know, I'm still waiting to get the flu or something where I have to sit down for 3 days and then I'll watch them then. But until then, I don't have that kind of attention span.
I'm not a binger either. Like, I don't like to binge things. And if I fall too far behind, I'm never going to catch up. So that's why I never got around to, Punisher Season 2, because I just never could commit to watching all of those episodes.
It sounds like so long. Like whenever you put it, like, oh, it's only 50 hours.
What?
Yeah, I mean, this really came down to who was going to come in second place. And that was Jessica Jones with 16% of the vote. Daredevil got the highest percentage of vote for a poll ever.
Yeah, it is true that the three Daredevil seasons are actually the best continuing show, like, of all of them. Like, again, I could rewatch any of those seasons and enjoy them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I still reckon that first season of Jessica Jones taken alone is the best.
Okay.
The Daredevil, I think, across the three seasons has the better story arc.
Yes. It's the most consistently good from beginning to end. It doesn't have any dips between seasons, and it has compelling stories in all of the seasons to tell. Anyways, our fourth poll, which was during our review of X-Men Mutant Massacre, right?
That was, and so we went with who is the best mutant introduced in the 1980s. So the best 1980s mutant. And it was all women. You could choose from Kitty Pryde, Rogue, Dazzler, and Magic. And Andrew, I believe you famously said on the Twitter that this was Rogue's poll to lose. Well, she lost it.
Oh, wow, that's crazy.
Well, that's just because I'm sure you were secretly campaigning somewhere. I don't know how Rogue lost this one, but you're right. Magic fans came out of the woodwork to vote for this. I mean, it was close, though. Come on, give us the percentages, because it was close.
So Magic won with 39%, Rogue in second with 35%, Dazzler in fourth, Kitty Pryde a distant third at 16%. But you're right, we had a massive turnout. My Magic people coming for me, yes. Thank you. Thank you very much. Everyone agrees she is by far the bee's knees.
Chad, you didn't vote for Magic, did you?
I came of age in the 90s with the X-Men 92 cartoon, and so I'm a Rogue man, sugar. Even though we'd never be able to touch, it would be unrequited love. She's still the one that steals my heart.
Yes.
The X-Men.
I used to love any time Rogue would end up being sent down to, like, the Savage Land, because it didn't matter. It never mattered what kind of costume she got going into the Savage Land. Within, like, I don't know, five pages, that costume somehow got conveniently ripped down to a bikini.
Absolutely. Remember those Jim Lee issues? Oh, my.
But it didn't matter. She could have been in an anorak and, like, full snow pants. Somehow it would turn into a bikini by page 15.
Yes, and not only that, whenever she went shopping, it was always green. She was always wearing green stuff. Like, we get it, you have a green costume. Doesn't mean you have to wear a green dress, green jeans.
Well, I voted for Rogue, too. Although, I was actually really surprised. Kitty Pryde fans didn't know that. Kitty is a very popular X-Man. Some people consider her, like, the linchpin of the X-Men team. And
she's the most powerful. One of the most, she's like Omega level. But
was that the only reason you didn't vote for her, J.A.? Is because you had to pick between Magic and Kitty Pryde, and you were like, well, I guess.
Well, I mean, yeah. It was hard.
Pride of the X-Men, the failed X-Men pilot, which was the basis of all the X-Men characters in the arcade game. Anyways, what was our final poll?
Best television movie Catwoman.
Meow.
And this is the first time we had a combination pick for one. And this, I blame Twitter on this, because you can only have four choices. And you only have a limited number of characters when you're putting in the choice. So the choices were Julie Newmar / Eartha Kitt. Michelle Pfeiffer of the Batman movies by, thinking Tim Horton. It's like, no, that's the coffee.
The Tim Burton Batman Returns.
Anne Hathaway from the Nolan Batmans, and Zoe Kravitz from The Batman.
And for a while there, Zoe was winning this. Like, for a couple days. Like, it seemed like it was Zoe's to lose.
It was a Zoe Kravitz stand fest. They were coming out of the woodwork, but there was always an undercurrent. I reckon that our fan base skews very Gen X. And, you know, anyone who's grew up Gen X or that early Gen Y, you remember going to the McDonald's and getting the cups with the Frisbee tops. You remember all the tie-ins, and you remember Michelle Pfeiffer, and she won this with 39% of the vote.
Chad, of course, you voted for those folks from Batman 66, right?
It's so hard to pick. They're all wonderful, but if I had to choose, I'm a Julie Newmar guy. Oh, just thinking about her. My eyes kind of point to the sky, and life is just better.
Yeah, and plus she was in that cool animated movie that they put out a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah, with Adam West.
Right, they were able to bring back a lot of that original cast, so that was kind of cool. Reconnect with Julie Newmar as well before Adam West died, so that was really neat.
Yes, I was glad that they got a healthy percentage of the vote. It was actually higher than I thought it would be. What blew me away, though, was Anne Hathaway just cratering.
Yes.
6%.
No, I have this feeling that, like, Dark Knight Rises, people don't like that movie.
They say, oh, the Christopher Nolan trilogy is so awesome. And it's like, well, what about Dark Knight Rises? Well, we don't talk about that one.
Exactly.
It's a third of the movies. It's like, we don't talk about the Ewoks.
We don't talk about Anne Hathaway. But you're right. I mean, I like Anne Hathaway. I think she's gorgeous. But I don't think she had sultry film noir, femme fatale kind of... Got to get that from Catwoman.
Yeah, there should be an element of danger. And you don't know where you quite stand all the time with her. And of course, the elephant in the room with this poll was that I did not include Halle Berry.
And rightfully so. Because that movie sucks. But you know what doesn't suck? Our Last Comic Shop weekly polls. And we hope that you make sure that you check out our Twitter page every Wednesday over at Last Comic Shop and vote in them. J.A.'s nice enough to put them out. Make him smile by participating every single week. And we'll be right back with more of the Last Comic Shop right after these messages with our review of Superman 78. So stay tuned.
And I just got to give another big shout out to my magic people. Well done, guys. Well done.
Hey, this is Ken M.
Padawan J.
Coach Duffy.
From the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour podcast. Every week, the ODPH is talking sports, movies, TV, comics, and more. It's always a parlay of topics on each episode. You can find the ODPH on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, and wherever you find great podcasts, such as the one you're listening to right now. Don't forget to check out OchoDuroParlayHour.com, where you can find the links to all of the ODPH social media accounts, links to the bands whose music you hear each week on the show, hashtag 607 podcast info, and Parlay Points, our companion blog section of the show. Thanks for listening to the ODPH. Now get back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
All right, we're back with more of The Last Comic Shop, and it is now time for a Read Pile Review. Yes! Where we review comic books based on movies that were released, like, I don't know, 4 decades ago. Because they're still relevant to us. Because
right?
they were the movies that we grew up with. Damn it, and we're the greatest generation now. Forget those other people. We are. Those people that were born in the late 70s, 80s, into the 90s. We're the generation. You'll like what we like.
Wow.
And we like Christopher Reeves as Superman. So we're doing Superman 78 on today's program. Real quickly, Chad, who did this particular collection of issues based on that classic movie?
So this was a 6-issue series, came out starting last year into this year, and it was written by Robert Venditti with art by Wilfredo Torres and Jordi Belair on colors with David Lamphere as letterer.
So I think it's only right for our resident cinephile, J.A. Scott, give us the 10-cent synopsis for this, given I thought this played out like a movie a little bit. So kind of what happened here, J.A.?
Yeah, so the big conceit of this whole series is that it's based off of, like, what would have happened after Superman 2. And really, Superman. Superman 1 and 2 were filmed at the same time by Richard Donner. Donner got kicked off the second one, but whatever. It's that Superman. So it's Christopher Reeve. It's Margot Kidder. Characters are drawn like the actors from the movie. So Lex Luthor is Gene Hackman. And Brainiac comes down to Earth because he finds out there's a Kryptonian on Earth. And he wants to then preserve Earth because he thinks that Kryptonians are like this evil thing in the universe and they destroy what they produce. So when he shrinks down Superman and Superman needs to fight to get out and become big and save Metropolis, save the Earth, fight Brainiac. It is very cinematic. It's actually a better movie than Superman 1. I watched Superman 1 before, after I read the book and I was like, oh man, I remember this being a lot better than it was. There is a lot of padding in that first Superman.
Wow. Yes, you're right, though. It is. I mean, honestly, the best movie out of that is Superman 2 because you don't have the origin story and what have you. And so you're just able to do, you know, Superman versus Zod and they're on equal playing and he's got to, you know, come from behind. It's a better movie than Superman. But you're right. I can agree with that as an initial thought for sure. I wanted to really quickly kind of add to your 10-cent synopsis, though, because there are some neat things going on in this series that are kind of Easter eggs for longtime, you know, comic book readers like us, such as the fact that Brainiac, you know, he shrinks Metropolis, but it's after he shrinks a part of Krypton and makes the bottled city of Kandor. A lot of stories about the bottled city of Kandor. It's a real Silver Age kind of idea from the Superman books. Plus, even though you get the Brainiac that's all green in the face, you get all the robot Brainiacs, which are
the superpowers.
Yes, the superpowers line. I had it too. I have that action figure with the karate kick. Like, why they would give Brainiac a karate kick is beyond me, but they do.
Robots love karate.
He was so creepy growing up. Like, seriously, that toy scared the bejesus out of me. I don't know. That's why I needed to have it, because I was just like, that's scary, but I also need this.
And it was all chrome. It was the best one.
Yeah.
I mean, Darkseid was cool, too, with the Omega Vision. Brainiac was awesome.
So it was awesome that they made all these robot Brainiacs running around. And it also, you know, it gave Superman some stakes. I also like the fact that they got really close to all the characters, like J.A. brought up in the drawing. For example, Jor-El is still Marlon Brando in this. The Lex does kind of look like Gene Hackman at times. He's definitely got the same mannerisms as Gene Hackman's Lex. I wanted to ask you guys, did you like it that it was kind of more of an interpretation as opposed to, you've seen some of these in other books where they do the really photorealistic drawings where it's like, we need to immediately make this look like Christopher Reeves as opposed to an interpretation of Christopher Reeves.
Yeah, that was actually one of the things I kind of had a problem with. I wasn't a fan of the noses. So the artwork for me, just, it was a little bit too sketchy, I guess. I thought it would have been better if it had also been sort of more Silver Age-y in its interpretation. Where I thought they nailed the characters was in the writing, especially in the dialogue between Margot Kidder's Lois Lane and Christopher Reeve as Clark Kent. I could see Margot Kidder and Christopher Reeve making that, and especially the Lois Lane bit. I thought that was nailed perfectly.
I still think she would have gotten herself into even more trouble. I didn't think there was enough Margot Kidder Lois in this.
Yes, that is true. That's the other thing that is it in the second movie where she purposely drops herself into the Niagara Falls, into the Niagara River?
Just to see if Superman will save her or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah. But she's always getting in the middle of an earthquake and getting swallowed up just randomly. I mean, he has to reset the entire, I don't know, timeline of Earth to save Lois at some point. Where was that? I mean, you do get a great scene in this at the end, not to give too much away, but basically Metropolis is hanging in the air like they ripped it out, like almost like ripping out part of New York, and it's like hanging in the sky, and then it starts to fall to the Earth, and Superman has to grab it pretty much.
He's got
to
catch it
and lower it gently to the ground like a fly ball. It does tee into this like uber powerful Superman, like, you know, again, a type of Superman that could reverse the rotation of the freaking Earth,
but yet comes across as everyday and every man. And that's the one thing I loved about the Superman movie, was he could do all these amazing things, but you didn't look at him and expect him to be able to do it.
Heck yeah. It was weird with Christopher Reeves. He didn't fill out the suit like you would expect. Like, we've come to see Superman as this macho muchacho, like almost bodybuilder type. And Christopher Reeve was a lankier version. But at the same time, he would still exude that strength. You know, the tagline was, you could believe a man could fly. You could believe, for whatever reason, Christopher Reeve was able to sell everything that he did. And as a little kid watching those movies, like, it was magic.
Right. You know, this might be a little bit of a rabbit hole going down, but it kind of never made sense to me in any sort of comic book. How, like, any character, whether it was Superman, whether it was even the Hulk, how you have to have huge muscles in order to lift 10,000 tons. These are characters that can lift, like, extraordinarily large amounts of weight, right? There is no way you could show a musculature on anybody that would be able to lift that amount of... So, like, at that point, it's just kind of like, I'm actually glad that they don't. Because otherwise, like, you'd have to be, like, this grotesque abomination of muscles in order for you to lift something like that.
And two, as someone who's let my gym membership lapse 15 years ago, they would have to work out all the time to maintain that muscle tone. They wouldn't be able to eat cheese. Like, they wouldn't be able to do anything. They would just be working out all the time. And they'd never have time for superheroics.
But it's, yeah, but a couple other things that I kind of wanted to bring up in terms of initial thoughts. I do feel like the six issues, though, were a little bit uneven because there were some moments where things got a little bit slow for me. I really thought the first two issues were extremely strong. Building up to Brainiac coming to Earth, Superman sacrificing himself to save the Earth, surrendering so that... But then he gets put in the bottle of Candor, and you do get that kind of almost like Captain America, man at a time kind of thing, where he's like, I don't fit in here. I've always wanted to be on Krypton, but evidently I'm not a Kryptonian anymore. You can't go home again. But at the same time, didn't anybody else think that was like kind of boring?
I was going to say it was like the classic third reel of a movie. That's the time you can go get popcorn or go to the bathroom in the middle. You're not going to miss much. They're kind of setting up the next movie and some plot that doesn't actually matter so much.
Yeah, I don't know. With this whole book, I would go back and forth between like, this is great, I can't believe it. And then like, oh, I don't like that. And like, I vacillated, like, you know, issue by issue, page by page sometimes, where it's like, I love the Army of Brainiacs. That was tons of fun. But I wasn't a huge fan of the, like, expected more out of Lois Lane. And I don't know if that's just my modern sensibilities and giving something to Margot Kidder that wasn't there in those initial movies. But, we were talking earlier about the likenesses. I like the fact that it wasn't spot on, but at the same time, there were a couple of occasions where I was like, oh, I don't know if I like that much. And then the whole Bottle City thing really creeps me out. Like, turning entire civilizations into ant farms that are going to do what? Live in the Fortress of Solitude now?
Yeah.
Like, that's a good thing? Like, no. Now Superman has all these prisoners to take care of. Yay!
There's so many things that you could go into too, because like when he's in the Bottled City, the people are asking him, oh, welcome to the council, and what do you think of this, what do you think of that, what do you think of bottle time versus outside time and the difference and the fact that we don't age in here. I'm like, whoa, that's like a massive concept that you just dropped in a piece of dialogue,
right,
as a throwaway line.
There was another old guy that was like, how are you going to dress
deal with overpopulation, and then he's getting hit on
space because we live in a freaking bottle.
And then he was getting hit on by, well, let's bring our houses together to procreate to make another stronger line.
I mean, again, I got those parts because it was kind of reinforcing the fact that, although yes, again, Superman has always wanted to reconnect with Krypton, he's been away too long. Like, he never grew up there. He never knew these people. He's an earthling for all intents and purposes, and he misses the Earth. He misses, you know, hot dogs and watching college football. I mean, he's from a small town in Kansas, for God's sakes. He's not like a politician or anything, and that's really what is great about some of those scenes, is you still did get this feeling that every single time Superman opened his mouth, I could hear Christopher Reeves talking. I could hear that salt of the earth, that kind,
unsophisticated but moral. And that was, I think, you know, going back to what we were talking about with body type and Christopher Reeve not having, you know, muscles but still kind of exuding. It was because he had this force of will that you knew that he was, you know, it wasn't Mike makes right, it was, you know, my moral compass, my true character. He was really a very idealistic Superman that was perfect for kids at that age, you know, in the late 70s. This is what you want to strive to become. You might not be able to fly. You might not look like a big jacked up wrestler, WWE, or I guess it was WWF at the time. You can do what is right. You can, you know, not lie, not steal, and
say defend. Thank you, eat
say
your peas.
Thank you, eat your peas, brush your teeth, wipe your nose.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And it's so funny because my version of Superman in my head is that wish fulfillment character for kids. And I remember when the Snyderverse came out, and lots of people had lots of things to say in praise of those movies. But that Superman, like, if you're going to have a character who can fly and shoot laser beams out of his eyes and have ice breath and every single power imaginable, you've already taken away every realistic weakness possible. Why would you make that character anything else but a wish fulfillment for kids? Like, we shouldn't have to worry about him snapping Zod's neck and terrorizing cities and, you know what I mean? Like, it's Superman. It should be somebody you look up to and be like, man, I'm glad he's on our side.
And equally, you should have a Lex Luthor that's as charismatic as the Lex Luthor in this. Again, this is my Lex Luthor. I don't understand how there is any other Lex Luthor in any sort of other DC. I never got when he was like a maniacal megalomaniac that was completely immoral and, you know, would threaten the world on a cosmic scale. Like, that's not my Lex Luthor. My Lex Luthor is, like, pretty much a con artist from beginning to end that is actually really smart. In this, you get the Lex that I like. He wants to show that he is Superman's archenemy. He wants to be like, look, there's this new guy on in town and Brainiac, and no, I'm the guy. Like, you don't walk on my turf.
You're not allowed to destroy Superman. That's my job. So that's I'm going to help Superman escape you so that I can destroy him.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because it's all about his pride. It's all about, like, again, that confidence, man, that, you know, he's got to believe it himself in order for other people to believe it. And if somebody comes into that world and kind of even pokes a little hole in that bubble, like, he's like, no, I don't like that. Like, I don't like knowing that I'm just this guy. Like, no, I am Lex Luthor. And I did love that scene. I don't know if you guys did, but talking about Easter eggs, when he walks into his secret laboratory in the back and he's got the purple and green armor there.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, even just the fact that it's bald Lex. Wasn't it Gene Hackman never wanted to be bald?
Yeah. So you'd have always the toupee or something.
Like,
so
finally getting to see that.
Right. Sexy Lexi. Like, that's my Lex Luthor. And you got that in spades more than any other character.
And it was also so cinematic. Like, when he's escaping Metropolis as it's being lifted up, he's escaping in a hot air balloon. I was like, that's such the movie Lex Luthor, right? Just these wacky juxtapositions of not a helicopter, not some space thing, a hot air balloon.
All he needed was 40 cakes in tow. And it would have been the best Luthor ever.
So the other one that I wanted to bring up was, I think, was the Brainiac based on David Bowie?
That's what I got out of it. He looked like David Bowie to me.
Because I've watched The Man That Fell from Earth, which is a great sci-fi movie featuring David Bowie. And it kind of had like a little bit of a David Bowie look. What did you think Brainiac looked like, J.A.?
I did not pick that one up at all. I have to go back and look now. I just thought he looked like Brainiac. I was like, I wasn't thinking as much as the other characters. Oh, that's Gene Hackman. That's Christopher. I wasn't even thinking who are they drawing Brainiac like. Wow. That would be like Labyrinth era David Bowie.
Right, exactly. That's why it seems like it would fit, because you're talking about an early 80s David Bowie, you know, and I feel like he could have brought across that kind of alien menace. And especially those scenes, like if they would have let them shoot those scenes on like his destroyed home planet. I could totally, because he would have that.
Oh, he had blonde hair in that one. So yeah. Right. Okay. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I could see that now. I see it. I see what you're dealing.
So at the end, I guess we got this comic book. And I guess my last question before we go to break is, do you feel like we were cheated that we didn't get this movie? Do you feel like the movie would have been as good as what we got in this comic book? If he would have got it like in 81 or 82, like this would have been something they could have filmed.
I think they would have struggled with some of the special effects, but it would have been much better than Superman 3, and we're not even going to talk about Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
Yeah, my thought was, oh, heck no. There's no way they could have had flying Brainiac robots and the big mech thing and all. Like, I don't think early 80s, late 70s technology, movie technology was anywhere close. Like, we got flying Superman, and we're like, all right. Superimposed over outer space. They're like, wow, can you believe it? There's a lot of technical prowess here that I don't see them achieving.
Well, one thing we're always going to achieve on The Last Comic Shop is giving you a rating for the book that we just reviewed, and that's coming up right after these messages, so stay tuned.
Coming to you live from whatever podcast you're currently listening to, it's your boy Jay West with my co-host Mac East from the We Get Dub podcast.
What up, nerds? It's me, Mac East, and we got a badass anime podcast for you. We got hot sauce, we got hot takes, we got booze and banter.
And you can listen to us on all major platforms.
The We Get Dub podcast hits harder than a Goku gut punch.
Hi, everyone. This is Mark, the DM for Stranger Damies. What is Stranger Damies, you ask? Well, we're just a bunch of first-time D&D players exploring the world of Tal'Dorei 30 years after the events of the Coma Conclave, which was made famous on Critical Role. Join us every week as we roll some dice, make some mistakes, but most importantly, we have fun. New episodes air every Wednesday at strangerdamies.podbean.com or on your favorite podcast streaming app. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at StrangerDamies. And is it Wednesday yet?
All right, we're back with more of The Last Comic Shop, and it's now time for our rating, where we might not get through this segment as fast as a speeding bullet, but we're definitely going to give you at least some ratings that are stronger than a locomotive.
Tall buildings. I believe we did leaping tall buildings. We have done speeding bullets.
Yeah.
I come up with an arbitrary scale, and right, everyone has to do it.
So what's our arbitrary 1 out of 4 scale for this week's ratings, J.A.?
Well, you did mention speeding bullets. We have done that for a Superman book. I think we did leaping tall buildings. We haven't done stronger than a locomotive, I don't think. But as we alluded to in our review, this Superman is not all about looking strong. And, you know, it's more on the inner side. What makes your character big and strong? But what this book does have in spades is Brainiacs. That's right. We've got Brainiacs coming out of the woodwork. We've got Brainiac robots. We've got Brainiac transferring his green entity to other things. So how many Brainiacs are you giving this book?
Well, there you go. Well, why don't you kick us off then? How many Brainiacs are you giving Superman 78, J.A.?
So I've got to give it 3.25 Brainiacs. So it's three full brains and then a little bit more of the front lobe section.
Okay.
I thought it was really fun. I thought they nailed the dialogue and the writing, especially between Clark Kent and Lois Lane. I appreciated that the art made them look like their Hollywood counterparts, though I did have a bit of issue. I thought it was a bit too sketchy for me. I thought if they had married the look with more Silver Age artistic techniques, that would have been perfect. But maybe that's just because I think of that age and that era of Superman as like the John Byrne Superman, right? So it's got to be sort of, and I think that's probably a bit on me. I did feel that the story, as we have pointed out, kind of got uneven at parts. But that being said, it was 6 issues. It was really fast read. It was exciting. I loved that they had all these little Easter eggs that you were talking about, the bigger Superman universe. I love that they had Easter eggs to the movies. So, like, when he's fighting some of the Brainiac robots, he rips off his crest and he throws it and it becomes the giant sticky fly peeper thing from the movie. I was like, yes, that's so awesome.
That is dumb as hell. That cellophane thing. And he's like, here you go. But it was great that they used it. I smiled too, I won't lie. Chad, what is your rating for this week?
Well, since I am a sucker for the old superpowers line, and they had that Brainiac action figure, which is super expensive and super hard to find right now, my rating scale is going to be in Brainiac toys. And I will give it 3.25 Brainiac toys. So 3 full ones, and just the arms and legs, in case they break off your other superpowers toys. This was a lot of fun. the art was really solid throughout the course of this book. And it was on that line of, you know, the likenesses were close enough. You knew who people were supposed to be. I enjoyed the David Bowie's turn as Brainiac. I don't know if he agreed to that or not, but I enjoyed it. But at the same time, at the end of the day, and this is, you know, looking back on the Superman 78 movie, it is of its time. And I wouldn't feel right giving this a 4 just because it does suffer the same limitations as that movie. And that's to its benefit or to its detriment. You can decide. But I'm going to go 3.25 Brainiacs. Still lots of fun.
Okay. Well, for me, I think I'm going to go a little bit higher than both of you. I think I'm going to give it a 3.5, like a solid 3.5 Brainiacs.
Is that the right side or left side of that half?
I think I'm more of a right hemisphere person, so I'm going to go with the right hemisphere. So, like, I can't give it a full 4 because, to my point earlier, I thought some of those scenes inside Bottled City of Kandor were kind of boring. I don't really care about Kryptonian politics. I got what they were trying to do. And I think, like, if you had shot a movie like that, you would have had a scene where Superman reconnected with his parents. I don't know if they would have got Marlon Brando to come back. God knows they had to pay him a lot of money just to do the scenes in Superman itself. But, like, I wanted more fights between either Superman and Brainiac, because, again, I thought Brainiac was a credible threat. Again, that was what was really missing from Superman 1, in my opinion, and what they fixed in Superman 2, is they gave Superman actual stakes and an opponent that was worth his time. And so Brainiac was definitely a good arch nemesis for him in this story. Plus, you got his other nemesis in Lex Luthor, again, not only trying to stop Superman, but also kind of in this rivalry with Brainiac, which kind of, again, pulls back to the classic Luthor-Brainiac team-ups or rivalries that you would have in Silver Age comics throughout the year. So I think the writer got all that. That's what makes it a 3.5. It is something that I would recommend to anybody. Or whether you've watched recently any of the Christopher Reeves movies, that's all you need, is to just watch one of them to understand this book. And so for people just coming into the comic book tent, this is a very accessible Superman book. It's only 6 issues. You know all the characters because of pop culture, and you can just pick it up and start reading, which is great for any new fan. And speaking of other things that are great for new fans, you might find some of those things with our recommendations. Yes, on the Last Comic Shop every single week, we like to give you other books in addition to Superman 78 that you can pick up at your local comic book shop today. So what's your recommendation for this week, Jay?
I'm going to recommend another Superman book that's sort of outside main continuity, but also very well done. All-Star Superman.
Oh, that's a great one.
By Grant Morrison, with pencils by Frank Quitely and inks by Jamie Grant. It kicks off the Superman's trying to prevent the sun from being destroyed by some Lutherian plot device, and as a result is exposed to massive amounts of sun gamma rays or whatever. And so he essentially has, like, Superman cancer, and he's going to die. But he's also then super, super powered. So what then transpires is sort of the 12 trials of Superman, where he has to essentially go through these 12 trials, kind of like trials of Hercules, to do things that will save Earth and Kryptonian. He reveals himself to Lois Lane, because in this story she doesn't know he's Superman. My favorite little part is near the beginning, when he shows her Fortress of Solitude, he's like, "Oh, I just leave the key under the mat." She's like, "Well, won't somebody steal it?" He's like, "Well, no, I carved it from a dwarf star, so no one can pick it up."
But you're right. There's some great scenes in that. There's a great issue where he basically gives Lois one day the equivalent powers of him. So, like, she can be truly his equal and understand, like, what it is to be Superman. And they get to have, like, a date where they're hanging out with other people that are ridiculously superpowered. And it's a wonderful issue. To your point, it's kind of like not only a 12 labors of Superman, but it's also kind of like a Superman bucket list. Like, that's like this drumbeat that's going through this entire series. Like, you know, he's ultimately going to die. So all of this has stakes. All of this has ramifications. You need to see Superman finish these things because they're important to him.
And I really like, I think Grant Morrison gets to like how emotionally intelligent and thoughtful Superman can be. Because usually he's just this sort of, you know, be moral, be upstanding. It's not very Christopher Reeve, but I thought that they were able to peel back that onion a bit and really get into, you know, sort of what drives him and you know, towards the end of his life. And he's going to die sort of a compassion that you don't often see in Superman.
Well, that is a tremendous pick. I can't recommend that book enough. I'm glad that J.A. brought it up on this show. If you have not read All-Star Superman, go out and pick that up today. We might have to cover that on the
I was just going to say, might have to we might have to review that.
All right. So with my recommendation for this week, this is in regards to something for those folks that are comic book historians in some ways. They kind of want to know about how comic books and, you know, just popular culture and American culture have met up over the years, or attempted to try to meet up or cross over. And Superman has always been a kind of an ambassador for the comic book fan and the general public. Like when it comes to like, you know, recognizable superheroes, Superman is always the number one character. And so this is a book called The Amazing World of Superman, and you can get it in a wonderful hardback copy nowadays. They call it the official Metropolis edition. And really what this is it starts out with just a reprint of a Superman issue from 1955 in which they created a Superman land, basically a theme park based around Superman. And after you reading that issue, you get into how this actually was going to happen. There was a small town in Illinois that renamed itself Metropolis. Their Chamber of Commerce was going to build a Superman theme park jointly with DC, like a Disney World or something, all around Superman in the early 1970s. It was derailed due to the oil embargo of the mid-70s, so they never ended up building this theme park. But this collection basically talks about the entire history, like what was supposed to happen. And this book is kind of put together as if like this would have been something that you would have picked up at the park, where it not only gives you a couple Superman stories, it gives you some great information on Superman's rogues gallery. There is a fantastic section on how they make comic books. I mean, again, this would have been something they would have been giving out to kids that would have been coming to Superman land. So it goes through all these pages of all these people, like Carmen Infantino. Here's writer Denny O'Neill sitting at a typewriter creating a Superman script.
It's like when you go to Hershey Park and you go across the street to Chocolate World and you get on the little ride that takes you through how they make chocolate.
Yes.
That's what it would have been.
Yeah.
It would have been, you had been in the cart that turns this way and you would have seen like DC bullpen, and then it turns this way and you could see the big printing press rolling out the papers. Then you turn back and you see and the whole time you've got this horrible like bad music playing over the speakers that's coming from behind your seat.
Right. Well, and my favorite pages in here, though, is Kurt Swan, who is a lot of folks feel is one of the definitive artists of Superman because he drew Superman all through the Silver Age. Basically, he has a couple pages on how to draw Superman. And what the best part is, like, it shows how Clark Kent has a slouch that drops him to 5'11", as opposed to Superman, who is 6'2". So that's how his slouch drops what four
that's,
inches?
That's how he gets away with it, a slouch and some glasses.
True. But it's just wonderful to see these pages drawn by Kurt Swan. Similar to, you know, if you're a Marvel fan and you had like drawing comic books the Marvel way with the John Buscema art, to see Kurt Swan show you how to draw Superman. Maybe the comic books aren't the best in this particular collection, but you can't beat this if you just want to some interesting history about how comic books and pop culture could have crossed over with like mainstream media in the 1970s. Super great stuff.
And for my recommendation, I am not going to do a Superman, but I did enjoy going back to these old movie times so much. I'm going to recommend another movie book.
Ooh.
I know. I'm going to pull out Batman 89, which I will admit I have not finished reading all the way yet. But this series is written by original Batman 89 movie writer Sam Hamm, who I also remember from way, way back in the day writing Detective Comics, like two issues before I started reading Detective Comics. But I went back and got those. And he's a pretty good writer. And then the art is done by Joe Quinones, who for years on Twitter had been posting up Batman 89 pics, and there was no one else better qualified for this job. It is set in that Batman universe, and it really just carries forward all of those things that you wanted to see happen. So remember in the Lego movie when we finally got the Black Harvey Dent?
Right, Billy D. Williams. 45.
Billy D. Williams, there you go. We finally saw the Billy D. Williams Two-Face. Well, in Batman 89, you see Billy D. Williams Two-Face. In Batman 89, the six-issue miniseries out of DC, there's a new version of Catwoman, which looks a lot like a Michelle Pfeiffer. And even better, one of my favorite stories to tell as an action figure collector is with the Batman and Robin movie about how they had planned to have a Robin. They had cast a Robin. They had paid a Robin. And they had made an action figure of this actor's likeness to be Robin. And that person was Marlon Wayans. But since they cut Marlon Wayans out of the film, they literally whitewashed the action figure and just painted the skin white.
Jeez.
And it's once you look at it, you won't be able to unsee it. But Batman 89 actually brings out a Marlon Wayans style Robin. And all that wish fulfillment that you want from a book like that, it's coming through in Batman 89. Is it as fun as the Superman book, which I think is a little bit more focused? It's not as fun, but it's still pretty darn fun. And the art from Joe Quinones is just absolutely beautiful. He's one of those guys that can straddle the line between realistic likeness and great cartooning. It really is just tons of fun.
I was thinking, I wonder if they did this for Batman. And I even looked, I couldn't find it on Comixology, so I'm glad to know that there's a Batman 89, because that's my Batman. Michelle Pfeiffer is my Catwoman. That's my Batman.
And so if you enjoyed Superman 78, I highly recommend Batman 89 at comic shops now.
There you go. And we hope that you come back to our comic shop next week for more of the Last Comic Shop podcast. Again, we're going to be reviewing some Moon Knight, and you don't want to miss that. So make sure you rate, review, and subscribe on that myriad of podcasting platforms over at www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com. It's a terrific website where you can find all kinds of links to all those places, as well as a link to YouTube, where you can find things like all of our podcast episodes and unboxings of action figures and other comic book related stuff, as well as some interviews with independent creators that are doing awesome things on Kickstarter. And we like to try to keep up with them. Okay. So keep up with us, lastcomicshoppodcast.com.
And you can keep up with us on the social media at Last Comic Shop on Twitter and Instagram, where you can find things like really neat daily comic book factoids. You can be tucked into bed at night with a sweet Golden Age cover, or you can vote in our weekly polls or see what we're picking up in comic shops or what other stuff we're laying down for you on the social media. And if you need those connections again, you can always go back to our home base, www.lastcomicshoppodcast.com, where they can find what else, J.A.?
As always, we have a link to our merch store where you can get Last Comic Book Shop t-shirts, tote bags. This week on special, Clark Kent glasses. That you wear them, no one knows who you are.
Because I don't know who I am when I wear them. I look in the mirror and I'm like, who is this person?
They come with a special free bottle of pomade so that you can slick your hair down. Just like Christopher Reeve.
Good gravy. How much oil did he have in his hair then?
Okay, and while we may be the Last Comic Shop podcast, we do not want to be the Last Comic Shop. So we encourage you guys to pull out the Yellow Pages, search for Comic Shop in the Yellow Pages, find a place near you. Or you could use the Comic Shop Locator, www.comicshoplocator.com, where you could find the amazing world of Superman. in that hardcover edition. Or you could find the delectable All-Star Superman, which really is fantastic, by Morrison and Quietly. That's so good. And you could also find in the recent issue stacks, Batman 89, in addition to your Superman 78 fix. So head to a comic shop near you and find all that cool stuff waiting for you.
And until next week, I was the host with the most, Andy Larson. I was joined by J.A. Scott and Chad Smith. And we hope that you come back to the Last Comic Shop next week. Again, Moon Knight, stay tuned. Until then, stay safe. Stay fighting, Ukraine. And then remember that although real estate rates are going up throughout the United States, there are always great rates available to you in Otisburg. I got your stick, Mr. Luthor.
Oh, man. Yeah, this did not have that dude in it.
I agree. We need a director's cut of this comic book with 100% more dead baby.
Squeal, Piggy, squeal!
The Last Comic Shop was a 2022 Black Angus production.